So in 1967, I was 15 years old and going to high school. That gets applause. I was going to high school in the suburb of the San Fernando Valley. And one day in what we called government class, the teacher said, "Does anybody want to volunteer to be a correspondent from the high school and write about what's going on here for a local newspaper?" And instantaneously, I think, oh, there's going to be a lot of competition for this gig. I better get my hand up really quick. So, like, I shoot my hand up, and I'm not saying the words me, 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 like you do in elementary school, but I'm doing that. I'm like, and then I suddenly realize, I look around, nobody else's hand is up. So the teacher just looks at me and goes, "Okay, you," and hands me a piece of paper. "This is your contact at this newspaper." So the big newspapers at the time in Los Angeles were the Los Angeles Times and Herald Examiner, with millions of readers. But this was in a suburb, and there were, it's called the Valley News and Green Sheet, Green Sheet being like the advertising supplement, which was actually green. But there were like 300,000 people reading this. And I'm 15. So I think, wow, that's pretty good. So I start to write articles about what's going on. You know, like a congressman came to the school and gave a speech, and I wrote it up and I sent it to this person and it got printed. And then you weren't allowed to have facial hair at that time, but the seniors were given a special dispensation to have a beard growing contest. So I wrote about that. And, you know, any number of more or less trivial things. But I'm getting into the newspaper all the time, and I think, this is pretty cool. I mean, my writing up to this point were like sort of very bad imitations of James Bond books and stuff that I was just like scribbling, and Ray Bradbury stories. And I won a poetry contest when I was 15, which were these horribly depressed poems from like a, you know, 13-year-old person, which I read now and I'm like, this guy needed help. But, you know, I won a contest with him, so why not? So I'm writing these articles, and I didn't expect to get paid or anything, but at one point, like maybe 5 or 6 months into it, it turns out I am going to be paid, but I'm going to be paid in record albums. And I already like music, but I don't have any money, and I only own like 4 albums at this point. But I get like a stack of like 10 of them. And I remember one of the main ones was the first album by Quicksilver Messenger Service, which is considered like a classic, you know, San Francisco sound album. But I looked at it, and it was a sealed album, but it had like a hole in the corner. And I was like, what is this? It's like damaged. All the ones had like this hole or like a stripe in them. So I called the woman I was dealing with at the newspaper, and I said, these are like kind of damaged. And she said, no. You know, that's what the record company does to prevent you from taking them to the store and getting like money for them. You know, it's like a way of marking them as promotional copies. And I went, oh, okay. So I continued to write about all the stuff happening in the high school. Now I'm like 16 probably. And one day I realized I was getting all these albums, and I asked the person there, could I start reviewing the records? And she said, yeah, I guess so, if you want to. So I started writing these things, and she started printing them. And the first one came out, and it had this really weird, like, 50s drawing at the top of two, like, hip teenagers at their party, and it said, Platter Chatter. And I went, like, this is so lame, but, you know, I didn't pick it. So I start reviewing all these records, and a couple months into this, I get a letter routed through their office, and it's some guy who works at a record company who's been reading my stuff, and he like corrects one of my things, like, oh, that was Joe Cocker's second album, not his third album, or whatever it was. And he says, by the way, you know, if you send record companies copies of what you've been writing, they will send you free records. And here's a list of all their names and all their addresses, like on 2 pieces of paper. And I was like, wow, okay. So I did it. I sent all these people at all these record labels, you know, what I'd been doing, without telling them that I was 16. And they all put me on their lists. So now I'm getting every album released in the United States, like stacks of them, hundreds of albums every month. So I'm like, wow. But there's so many, I can't even like get into print fast enough, you know. So I decide, well, I'll go to the newsstand. I understand there are magazines that cover pop music and rock, so let me see what that's about. And so I go there, and there's all these like new magazines, like Rolling Stone, Cream, you know, Crawdaddy, like all the, you know, there was one called Fusion, which was like the Rolling Stone of Boston. And so, you know, I scraped my pennies together, and I bought one of each, and I wrote reviews, and I just sent them in, and most of them were published. So now I'm getting nationally published. I'm like 16 and a half. And they're also paying me. It's only like $5 or $10 or something, but it's amazing that I'm getting paid. Not only that, but I'm starting to get invitations from the record companies to go to concerts. And sometimes they do it in telegrams. So I'm getting telegrams at home saying like, the Who are playing tonight. We just found out, you know, can you come, you know? And I'm like going to high school. I can't go out at night. In fact, I couldn't even, I didn't have a car, you know. I had a driver's license, but I would have to ask my parents. So a lot of these I just wasn't doing. So then a crucial moment happens. I get a review in Rolling Stone. And I'm still in high school. And I review an album by a guy named David Peel. It's an album called The American Revolution, which is his second album. His first album, this guy was a street musician who lived in Greenwich Village, and he played on the streets. And a guy named Danny Fields, who's kind of a scenester, convinced Elektra Records to record an album on the street of him singing his like folk songs with a pickup band, and they were all about like getting high and stuff like that. And the album was called Have a Marijuana. And to Elektra's, the label's surprise, it sold 600,000 records. So the album I was reviewing was the follow-up. Now David Peel's not, you know, he wasn't a professional musician, and I hated this album. I thought it was just terrible. And the review I wrote for Rolling Stone was so nasty and so mean, and I like made fun of the lyrics. Like, I think I even called it "This Thing Has Lyrics Like This" instead of saying "This Album." And I was like, "Girls are made to love, and the war is bad, and you should smoke dope." And you know, this is what kind of an idiot this guy is. And it was an album that you opened up. It was a gatefold album, but I suggested in the review that instead of opening it out, that you fold it in and keep folding it and folding it and leave the record in the sleeve while you're doing it. That was like the punchline. So this review actually got into the first book of published of Rolling Stone reviews. They started a book division called Straight Arrow, and the first thing was the record review. And they put this review in a section called Music That Will Endure with other bad reviews, one of which is a famous John Mendelsohn review of Led Zeppelin, you know, tearing them apart. And I got like $35 to be in the book, so I thought, this is amazing. And I started writing for other stuff, other places. And I went to college, and I realized the more negative stuff I wrote, the more attention I got. That's what people wanted. And I was being like super clever, except I didn't know that much about music, so I would make mistakes all the time. Like, the person I am now looks back on some of these, and I go like, I can't believe I said that. Like, I said, oh, this band has a really good song called Cold Sweat, and I didn't know it was like an old James Brown song that they were just covering, stuff like that. In 1972, I went to see the Rolling Stones tour for Exile on Main Street, and I said, oh man, these guys are so old. I mean, they're like 30. Mick Jagger can't even get across the stage. I mean, this is an embarrassment, you know? And, of course, that's considered one of the greatest tours of all time now. I went to see Led Zeppelin once, and I didn't like the tickets, where the tickets were. And so I left after the first song, and friends later said, you know, that's considered the greatest Led Zeppelin show of all time that you walked out on. But there was something inside me that just was attracted to this idea of getting attention. And being nasty, I found out, was a really good way of doing it. But this David Peel review kept, like, nagging at me. Like, I was so mean. I wonder if David Peel ever saw it. And David Peel actually, right after the review, became friends with John Lennon, who had moved to New York. And because Peel was an activist, especially for marijuana, Lennon got friendly with him. And David Peel's next album actually was on the Beatles' Apple label, and it was called The Pope Smokes Dope. So anyway, I was basically still a kid, a teenager, and getting all this attention, and I was really full of myself, and it just bothered me. And as time went on, I did more and more negative reviews. I was doing positive stuff too, but a lot of negative ones. Like, I remember Boz Scaggs put out an album called Middleman, and I went, oh, you know, maybe you want to skip the middleman. You know, I was always looking for, like, ways of being clever, and, like, you know, it was just, I think about this and would just cringe, you know, at how stupid I was and young. In fact, I remember seeing a cartoon that had, it said young and stupid, and with, like, a kid throwing beer down his face. And I was like, that's kind of what I'm like, you know, looking now from there, you know, from this position there. So over the years, every time I was asked to write a bio, anything about myself, I would always say, Mark Levitin had a review, his first major review in Rolling Stone when he was 16 years old, and a review of David Peel that he feels kind of bad about. It was like a wound that I kept pointing out to, and I'm sure I was insufferable because I would tell this story to people all the time. Oh, man, I wrote this review of David Peel. Oh, it made me feel so bad. And this went on for decades. I keep bringing up this story, and I keep telling new people, like, oh, I'm such a terrible person. I did this bad review. But I keep bringing it up, like keeping it alive. So I do this for like 40 years. I'm telling this story about this David Peel thing. Everybody knows it, except I find new people all the time to tell the story. And I'm telling a friend of mine 45 years after the review, so it's like 2015 or whatever it was, and he says, and I'm telling him how bad I feel and everything, like the usual spiel, and he says, why don't you apologize to him? And I said, what? And I immediately felt so stupid, like I never thought of it, but also none of my friends over the years ever thought of it. And yeah, apologize. Do I really want to apologize? He said, you could listen to the album again and maybe it's not so bad. And I said, oh, no. I know the album is just horrible. I don't need to listen to it again. But the way I did it was terrible. So I thought, well, there's an internet now. I can find, you know, David Peel. I wonder where he is. I go online, I immediately find him. He still lives in Greenwich Village, probably in the same building, and he's still been putting out albums. In fact, at the time, he was kind of well-known about Zuccotti Park because, you know, the Occupy movement was on, and he was down there singing new protest songs with people. So that was kind of amazing. And there's his email address. So I wrote to him, and I titled the email, An Apology 45 Years in the Making. I thought that would get his attention. And I said, David, I don't know if you remember, but in 1970, I reviewed your album for Rolling Stone, and I was so mean. I was just this punk kid. I was so stupid. I can't believe I did it. Would you forgive me? You know, I don't know if you even remember. And I was thinking, like, am I reopening something now for him that's better to be quiet? But, you know, I sent it. And then I spent the rest of the day kind of wandering around like, what have I done? What have I done? What's going to happen? Oh, this could be really bad. And then I see he answers me like 6 or 7 hours later. And he sent me this most beautiful very hippie kind of, you know, of course I forgive you. We're all just on the great wheel of life, moving through the world, and who knows how we influence. You know, he doesn't say anything like, I remember your review, or, you know, you were so mean to me, or anything. He just leaves that all just like, yeah, it's all just a part of it. The great, you know, mist of life. And I had this amazing, like, body experience. They talk about having a weight lifted off your shoulder, but this is the first time I actually think I felt it. I actually felt like some mist or something coming off my shoulders, like a weight, and going up. And I felt like I could breathe, and it was amazing. And I just looked at it, and I went, wow, that was really amazing. And then David Peel died about 6 months or 7 months later. And I just thought, wow, I'm really glad I wrote that email, and I'm really glad I got that response. And this whole process kind of led me to say, you know what? I'm not going to write bad reviews. If something is bad, I'm not going to mention it. I'm just going to write about things I like. And in fact, I don't like this whole thing where reviewers get to be sent to concerts to review people they don't like already. Why don't you just send people that like them? Because why do we need to hear, you know, a fait accompli? So I kind of changed how I wrote about music, and it changed me, but it ended the story of me and David Peel.